Hello and welcome to another Ken 7 football chat. And joining me today is freelance journalist David Lynch. Dave, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good. Just actually back from honeymoon. So, yeah, it's been a busy few weeks, actually. And yeah, back into real life and work. So, yeah.
Are you feeling fresh after your honeymoon?
Yeah, well, me and my missus like drinking, so not that fresh, but no, it was good. It was good to get away and have a little break from the madness of football, and yeah, I'm ready to get back into it now, I think.
Fantastic. Well, while you were away, Liverpool had a massive game on Sunday against Man City. I'm not sure if you saw the game. I did see you tweeting during the game, so yeah. I assume that, yeah, you actually watched it. So what was your summary of the game?
Well, I suppose, I mean, I don't know, going into it, I think, you know, it felt like a big opportunity, didn't it, for Liverpool to sort of lay down a marker and blow away a title rival, you know, being back at Anfield with fans as well. And you thought, you know, I know City had won there last year, but you thought, you know, with the fans back in, it's completely different prospect, isn't it? So it felt like a big opportunity to sort of get stuck into Man City. But then, you know, you watch the first half and it was really, really tricky, wasn't it? I thought City were really, really good and Liverpool quite poor, to be honest, by the huge, you know, the high standards that they set. And so in the end, you know, the way, you know, with it finishing the 2-2 draw, some incredible goals in there. Liverpool's two goals were a joke, really. So good. You know, it sort of tempered the disappointment of dropping points at home to a title rival, the fact that they were so poor in the first half. But then, you know, I do think, you know, the further away you get from it, you're still looking back at it thinking it would, you know, to go top of the league and win there would have been a really big statement and would have, you know, you would have felt a lot better about it. So, you know, there is that little bit of disappointment there, I feel.
That first half, I mean, I was at the game and I remember scratching my head and I was looking at it going, Christ, these look like a level above us. We can't get near them. And I was actually thinking at halftime, we're going to have to change the formation. We're going to have to go, say, 4-4-2, a narrow 4-4-2 with the two lads up front, Mane and Salah, bring another midfielder on because we need to get a grip of the midfield. What he actually did was interesting. He didn't change anything. He just changed how high up we were pressing. And that seemed to work, didn't it, in that second half?
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought that post-match interview you did with Sky was really interesting, actually, about the fact that, you know, he didn't feel like he needed tactically to change too much. It was just more about, and you did see him shout this during the first half, is the players be braver, you know, be cooler on the ball, back your quality a little bit more in those difficult situations where City are penning you in. And I think the biggest sort of indicator of the transformation for me was Jordan Henderson. I thought that first half is one of the worst he's put in for a long time. And you know, I think he's a great player, but he really, really struggled. I think he was 50% pass completion. And that is purely on the basis of every time the ball came to him, he felt like he needed to chip one in behind because he was under pressure. Mm. You know, the manager's obviously got in his ear and everyone else's ear. And, you know, be calmer, be cooler, you know, show your quality in possession. And he was much better in the second half, as was the entire team. Just doing that a bit more is just having that composure in those tight areas against that City press. And I think that made the performance in the second half was miles better. And I thought Liverpool in that second half were the better side, having been so far off it in the first. So, yeah, it was interesting. I was in a similar mindset, really, in terms of he's got to change something here. This tactically isn't working. But it just shows you that football is as much about the mental side of things and you know, having that composure in key moments as it is about, you know, your tactical setup. And I thought that was, yeah, it was really interesting sort of to get that insight from the manager and just shows you what football is about, the whole package, really, I suppose.
City completely silenced the crowd. I mean, it was angry for the first 5 minutes when you were in there, and it was as good as an atmosphere as I can remember. But we went silent after 10 minutes. I think we're all watching and we're all thinking the same thing. We're all actually showing a bit of concern and a bit of anxiety because you think, Christ, this could go really badly here. There was some moments in the second half, particular Andy Robertson moments, where I don't know whether it came across on the telly, but when he really got stuck in, and that livened us all up. And from then, it was a completely different game. What do you think his performances have been like this season? And did you see something different in him that game?
Yeah, I think he with Andy Robertson, I think it's worth mentioning that last season, he sort of didn't hit the heights, did he, of the season prior and the season prior to that, in fact, because I think, you know, missing crowds, the fact that the schedule was relentless. Simicast didn't really give him a break that season because the manager didn't feel he could change things at the back. So I think this season it's all set up for him to sort of completely get back to his best. I think that's actually not been the case just yet because of the injury he had that sort of disrupted him early in the season. I think there's still more to come, but he's always reliable for things like that. He's getting the crowd whipped up. He's done it before against Man City, hasn't he? That big press that he did. Yeah. We remember that. And you know, he's always there to put in that big challenge or, you know, a little bit of snideness with their players. He loves a bit of that. And I think, you know, he's always good for things like that. And I know what you mean in terms of he was sort of key to that in terms of whipping up the fans second half and sort of saying we need to get this atmosphere going again because they had, you know, City had silenced him in that first half. I think that's one thing actually that was interesting. It's that maybe last season's win at Anfield for Manchester City, obviously it's a completely different animal coming to Anfield with fans back in. But I do think it gave them that confidence to just have that possession early on and try and calm things down. You know, this belief that, well, we have won at this ground, even though it's not the same. I think, I think they did use that a little bit and sort of give them the confidence to do something that they should have been doing for the last 5 years under Pep. It's coming to Anfield and thinking, this first 20 minutes, we do not need to score a goal. We just need to stop Liverpool getting the ball. We need to stop them having good pressing situations that will give them confidence. We need to stop them winning the ball in areas that will get the crowd up. And I thought they did that a lot better. And I think that's something that maybe City have learned. And that's something Liverpool are going to have to, you know, over the next couple of years of Guardiola v. Klopp in this fixture, I think Liverpool are going to have to get used to is City have sort of found a little way of working away into games at Anfield. And that's something Liverpool have to get on top of.
I think as Liverpool fans, we're always very quick to say, well, it's because we were shit. Because they've played well. It's always we were shit. Whenever we look at a goal, it's not they've just been brilliant for that goal. It's always, well, we messed up there. He didn't make the tackle. He didn't close down. And I think in that first half, they were just so good. We kept giving the ball away. And you think that's because of poor play or you know, a lack of vision or whatever. I think it's more because there was just no passing lanes on. They were very good at shutting things down before they happen, which isn't easy to see, really. It's much easier to see in the ground, as you'll know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's making sure, you know, you see the man on the ball, I think. And like you say, on television, this comes to you. You see the man on the ball makes a poor pass and he gives possession away. And you think, it's a terrible pass, what you're doing. But what you don't see is the three men who are swarming, closing off passing lanes in front of him for Manchester City and making it difficult for him to pick an option. So that in desperation, he picks a difficult one and he loses possession. That's, like you say, I think you do have to give huge credit to Man City, as much as Liverpool maybe didn't back themselves in playing out at times, and that played into Man City's hands. That's because City were doing a really, really good job of closing those passing lanes, of making things difficult for Liverpool. And yeah, you do have to hold your hands up at times and say what an incredible side they are. It's so high quality in what they do. And I think, that first half particularly as well, you look at it with a little bit of trepidation and think, are these too good to keep up with this season? I don't think that'll be the case. I think I'm hopeful for Liverpool's chances. But yeah, at times when they really turn it on, Man City are just ridiculous, aren't they?
So, you know, we've just touched on it there. What's your summary of the season so far and where do you think we stand going into the rest of the season?
I think, you know, for all the doom mongering that was going on after the transfer window closed, I don't think Liverpool have done too badly at all. I think, yes, could have been better, and maybe those drop points against Chelsea and Man City, they'll sort of look back with a bit of regret, because, you know, that sort of puts a bit of pressure on to maybe stay undefeated when you go to Stamford Bridge and when you go to the Etihad later in the season. You don't want to be giving up points to your rivals like that, because that swing can be crucial if it's going to be a 95 plus point season, which it very much could be this season, getting back to that. So, you know, I think there will be, you know, areas of disappointment in terms of that, but also, you know, the only unbeaten team in the Premier League, the right near the top, the flying in the Champions League as well. I think things are going really well. And I think that the fact that Harvey Elliott showed what he's shown in the early parts of the season, obviously hugely disappointing to losing to injury, but shows you why Liverpool weren't mad on getting a midfielder. Same goes for Curtis Jones. They obviously believe these players can have a big impact across the remainder of the season. I think the only worry you would have would be that sort of depth up top where they didn't change things. But if Origi is going to continue to do, you know, score the odd goal and make the odd contribution, there's not that much pressure on him. You know what I mean? I don't think they'll be used that much, the likes of Minamino and Origi. So, You know, so far so good for me. Just can Liverpool keep everyone fit or as fit as possible and try and avoid those big injuries that derailed them last season? If so, I think they're in a good position to challenge for trophies on multiple fronts.
There's a couple of things you touched on there that I want to ask you about. First of all, Harvey, have you had any update on Harvey Elliott and how he's doing? Obviously, we saw a lovely picture of him on a bike the other day, which was great to see. But have you, from what you understand, is everything going well and progressing as it could be?
Yeah, Liverpool really reluctant to put a timescale on this. So, it's very hard to get an update, but there's no doubt he'll be back before the end of the season. It's not one of those sort of injuries. I think they're pretty confident. And the fact he's on a bicycle, I think it was 23 days after he actually suffered the injury, which is, you know, testament to the rehab staff, how quickly they reacted.
I was thinking about that. I mean, you need to go on a bicycle. You need full movement in your foot.
Yeah, to put full pressure on as well, and what would have been a fracture in his leg or in his ankle rather. Yeah, it's really promising. I think he might. You know, I don't want to put too much pressure on the lad, but I think he might be back slightly earlier than people would maybe perceive. I think, you know, you looked at Andre Gomez; he's got a similar injury in terms of an ankle fracture that was pretty horrific.
Was that 121 days he came back? I saw
exactly
him.
So yeah. Far quicker than anyone would have thought at the moment. You see him suffer the injury. I think these injuries, Liverpool won't put a timescale on it. It's very hard to get a brief on that sort of stuff at the moment, and I totally understand why they don't want to put pressure on the player. But I do think he will be back quicker than people maybe expect, because as horrific as that injury can look, in terms of rehab terms, it's nowhere near as bad as an ACL or anything like that. So I think, you know, get past the turn of the year and hopefully not too long after that, maybe see him back, which is huge as well, because, you know, at the start of the season, I thought he was excellent and showed that he could play a really big part this season. So, yeah, really looking forward to seeing him back.
If you're enjoying this video so far, please show your support for the Ken 7 channel by clicking the subscribe button, the like button, and also clicking the bell for future notifications.
If you could also share the video on your Twitter and Facebook account, that will show YouTube's algorithm that you like our content.
Do you know about Ken 7 merchandise?
The link is in the description of this video. We have premium fanwear for fans covering Liverpool, Celtic and Scotland. And it's fanwear for young and old. So we have t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, caps, mugs, you name it, we've got it. Just something else to remember, every purchase that is made on our website, we donate to the Marina Dalglish Appeal. So you're helping a great cause as well.
The other thing that you touched on was the transfer window in the summer, and I know it's gone and that, but I just wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, there was so much negativity around the fact, and when it boiled down to it, what we were really looking for was a fourth choice or fifth choice forward, because Salah, Mane, Firmino and Jota are all going to play. You know, they're already established. They're great players. We know that. So could you understand the fume over what essentially was a fifth choice backup forward, really?
No. I mean, there's a reason I don't have my mentions turned on Twitter anymore. No. I understand people's concerns about maybe getting a midfielder in, because you lose someone who played as much football as Gini Wijnaldum did for Liverpool in recent years and then don't directly replace him. That does not look good. But then I think you can see from this early part of the season what Curtis has done and what Harvey did prior to his injury, to see why Liverpool don't, you know, and Jurgen Klopp don't want a direct replacement at the end of the day. I mean, they did look, I know for a fact, that they were in touch with Florian Neuhaus's representatives. I know that sort of early in the summer in particular, they were assessing their options. But I think once Harvey Elliott came back and did what he did in pre-season, and they had a really close look at him, see that extra steps that Curtis has taken as well, they could see that, well, you know, we've got enough here to get by. We more than that, we want to create the space for these players to have the opportunities to play and develop at Liverpool. And if you get someone in who's a bona fide starter every week, you aren't going to be able to do that. So I think Liverpool fans, maybe sometimes you've got to think about that trade-off at times. And, you know, in midfield, the option was to maybe put Harvey Elliott in, who could be Liverpool player for the next 15 years. And I personally think he will be. I think he's that talented. Or go with someone who you could bring in. And I think they made the right decision there, because although he suffered the injury, I think the, you need to create that space for them. And like you say, in terms of the forwards, if Origi had gone, yes, they would have brought someone in. I've absolutely no doubt about that. That was the plan. But Origi, the offer never came in. So, you know, essentially, like you say, it's looking for a fifth choice attacker. And that's all really anything else that they would have possibly done. And the fact that they didn't, I don't think is going to harm them too badly. And if Origi in those, I mean, how many minutes is he probably going to pick up this season? 450, 500, something around that. You know, if he can get the odd goal and contribute in that way, that will be enough. And to have bought someone in to play that role would just, you know, doesn't seem that important. It doesn't seem like Liverpool are missing him at the moment. So, you know, I think you can't criticise the transfer policy at the moment, because things are going well. And maybe at the end of the season, I will be proven wrong on that. Liverpool will be proven wrong on that. But at the moment, it's difficult to say they have been, because, you know, things are going well.
I'd agree. I mean, let me pick you up on a name that you just mentioned, Curtis Jones. I have a lot of faith and belief in Curtis Jones as a footballer. I mean, he's still a very, very young kid, and he's played 50 games for Liverpool already, scoring goals, creating goals. I think, and I also think, and I just wonder what you thought about this, watching him in the youth team, he was a different type of player. He was more dynamic, and I think we've still got yet to see that. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think sort of since he's come into Liverpool first team, there's been an attempt by Klopp to round him out a little bit more and make sure he's doing the defensive work, make sure he's sort of playing that Genie Wijnaldum role in a way, is basically just ensure that you keep the centre of the pitch locked down completely, and then the creativity will come from the fullback. So I don't think it can do him any harm to be doing that as well, because I think the other side of the game, like you say, he was more of a number 10, wasn't he, or playing off the left in the under-23s. And really, you know, a hugely creative influence on those teams. He's still got that in his locker, and I think there'll be more of that to come. I think he will add more goals and things like that. And I think this season as well, we're seeing a step to sort of change what Liverpool's midfield looks like. The use of Elliott in that position sort of tells you as much that Jurgen Klopp is maybe thinking of moving away from that system that from the summer of 2018 onwards basically won them all that trophies, which was just, we don't have anything happen through the centre of the pitch. It's not really even part of our build-up. We go out wide, and then it's all the defensive responsibility in there. So I think that slight change is really good for Curtis. I think it's good for Harvey Elliott. I think that's going to, you know, be the next evolution of this midfield of Liverpool's. And so I think, you know, the opportunity for him to do more of that sort of stuff is going to come. And I think the fact, like you say, he's played 50 games already at his young age is huge. And I think he sort of, particularly at the start of this season, sort of went under the radar a little bit in terms of being an option, because I think he came through, you know, he made his real breakthrough in a season where it wasn't very positive, things were going wrong, and that was difficult for him. And then you had Harvey Elliott coming into the team this season and looking so good. You know, Curtis sort of almost became the forgotten man early in this season. He's shown in these last games that he can have a huge impact, and I think he will.
He was a large part of us being top of the league.
Yeah.
By Christmas. He played the majority of his games in that period. Then I think he maybe got a bit of a knock at some stage, and then he didn't really come back in the second half of the season when we were struggling, because we were desperately trying to find that rhythm, some sort of consistency of team selection. And I think he was unfortunate there. But people they have such short memories sometimes, and they remember what they saw in the last game.
Yeah.
And I found that particularly frustrating. I mean, you know, I listened to many podcasts, and after Jordan Henderson played on the left-hand side of the midfield in one game, and he didn't have a good game. And then on podcast after podcast, people on online and Twitter were saying, Jordan Henderson can't play on the left of a three in midfield. Of course he can. You give him 10 games there, I'm sure he'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. This is it.
The Trent in midfield thing after the 45 minutes playing for England in midfield. Well, that puts that to bed now, doesn't it? Seriously, I mean, you give Trent 10, 15 games in midfield, I'm sure you'll see how good he is. So exactly. It's frustrating, that sort of thing. Do you agree with me?
Yes, it's this short-term thinking, isn't it? It's people can't think beyond the last game. I think you've got to wait over, you know, it's like you say, 10, 15 games before you see patterns emerging about and really learning about what players can and can't do. This idea that I think it's actually happening around Sadio Mane at times. the amount of talk I keep hearing that he's completely finished is
100%, man.
I think, you know, okay, we may never see the peak level Sadio Mane at Liverpool. We might not see that again because he's, you know, he's getting on. He's not getting on a bit. I mean, that's ridiculous to even say it, but he's older than he was. Maybe those were his best years. You don't know. Maybe we won't see that again. It might not happen. But the idea that he's playing poorly at the moment is madness to me. Some things don't come off for him. You know, he won't skin his man every time. But I don't think he ever did. I think there's like a perception of what he was versus what he is now. And the fact, you know, he's still scoring goals. He's still influencing Liverpool's play. I think he's more involved than maybe Jota at the moment. I think it's going under the radar that he is maybe having a little bit of a tough patch because that he's just working out what that centre forward role means in this team. And but because he's a new signing or newer signing, gets a lot more leeway than Mane, who I think is having a huge influence on Liverpool performances still and working his socks off.
I think Sadio is quite technically unorthodox.
Yeah.
So he can look quite untidy sometimes. And especially if things don't go his way, he looks worse than he actually is. You know, if you had this very comfortable technical player who was trying to dribble past people and do the things that Sadio's made, I think it's more acceptable than... He just looks a bit ungainly sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's still having a huge influence on Liverpool's play. And like I say, more maybe than Jota, which I think he's going under the radar a little bit. And that's not to criticise Jota or say he's not a good player. He's been phenomenal since he came in. But I think there's more to come from him. But the fact is he will get more leeway because he is newer. He's the new toy. And whereas Sadio, I think sometimes it's a little bit unfair on him. And, alongside the goals he provides and the threat, he is still providing, and it's going under the radar. He's working so hard as well. So yeah, I think that speaks to the short termism that we were discussing there. Really, is that people forget very easily.
I think just to close this bit off, I mean, he scored 16 goals last season. For someone else, that would be a record season. And apparently that was a poor season. So people have short memories. I think you're right. I want to move on to the thing that most people are talking about at the moment. I really want to get your thoughts on this because I think as Liverpool fans, we are quite insular. And I'm not disputing this, but Mo Salah, he's incredible. He's having a fantastic season already. Most people, pundits like Jamie Carragher, are talking up as the best player in the world at the moment. I mean, I was looking at it. I'm sure Benzema, Haaland and Chiesa possibly have a little bit to say about that. And you've also got Ronaldo and Messi and Mbappe. So I just wonder what you thought about, you know, for you to weigh in on that debate.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think all of us would say, you know, how can anyone be playing better than this player at the moment? We are so focused on it. To be fair, I think he genuinely does have a strong argument. I think the closest to him at the moment is probably Lewandowski for me, what he's doing at Bayern. And people might not like this, and I'm reluctant to say it sometimes, but the Bundesliga is a weaker league than the Premier League. That is a fact. I know sometimes people get carried away with this best league in the world stuff and you know, the Premier League is overhyped at times, but it is a stronger league than the Bundesliga. And we've seen that in the amount of players that have recently sort of made that transition and struggled to reproduce the numbers of goals or influence they've had in the Bundesliga in the Premier League because it is a different sort of difficulty level. So for Salah to be doing it in the Premier League, which I think is the strongest league in the world at the moment, I think says a lot about the quality level. And I think personally he might be the best player in the world at the moment because I think Messi's still finding his feet at PSG. I think Ronaldo is you know, he's getting goals at United, but I don't think he's hugely influential in terms of the build-up play. And I think he's not the same player he was. So personally for me, I would say that Salah edges Lewandowski at the moment and arguably is the best player in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I do get everyone's point, and I just chuckle sometimes because we are so Liverpool focused, aren't we? And there's other people in the world doing extraordinary things. I mean, I think Benzema's got more goals than Salah and more assists. I think he's got 9 assists or something. So it is quite interesting. Someone else I wanted to ask you about, and I won't keep you too much longer, is Virgil van Dijk. Obviously, he's come back from an injury, and we're made up that he's come back. And he showed glimpses of the form. I certainly thought against Chelsea he looked like Virgil again. But, you know, how do you assess his form so far this season?
I think he's been really, really good. One thing I would say is I think we're not seeing peak Van Dijk yet, are we? And I think you can just see that, and there's little moments where I think he seems to have a huge influence on the way Liverpool defend at times when he's at his absolute peak, in terms of he just seems to be on the end of every header. He seems to be in every moment where a loose ball turns up, he gets hold of it and controls it. We're just not quite seeing that yet, but it's such a long layoff, isn't it? And you think it's going to take him time to sort of get his rhythm back again and get back into it. And Liverpool are still being careful with him. They want to sort of rotate in that position a little bit more this season as well, which I think is important. And I think, you know, it's still to come, isn't it? I still think he's, you know, even in the moment where we're talking about he's not quite at his best and he's maybe playing within himself just a touch, he's still probably the best centre-half in the Premier League, isn't he, by some distance. I think, you know, maybe Mo Salah showed that by sitting Ruben Dias down so many times at the weekend, and he's probably the nearest competitor. So, yeah, I think that it's exciting, really, that there's probably more to come, because I think that's true of quite a bit of the team as well. Maybe Salah aside, because of the heights he's hitting at the moment, but I think that trajectory, bloody hell, will happen throughout the season. I think we'll see improvement from him. I think we'll see improvement from the rest of the team as well. You know, that is exciting, because if Liverpool do get better, then the trophy's on the horizon.
No, that's good. Just before I let you go, let's cast our minds forward to the transfer window next summer, or even in the winter. Have you heard anything to suggest that next summer's transfer window will be a big one? I've heard that over on a few podcasts and in a few people writing about it. Is that the type of thing that you've heard?
I'm slightly cynical about the shout it will be a big summer next summer, because I think, you know, there's so much riding on it that I'm not sure that you could confidently state that now. And I wouldn't like to state that, because it would go way beyond the info that I have about what Liverpool's plans are. I think there's several decisions that need to be made around that. So first one, obviously the huge one, is whether Mo Salah signs his contract. Now, personally, I'm fairly confident he will. I think Liverpool will give out what will be by some distance the most lucrative contract they've ever given out in the history. And I think he will sign, because I think he recognises that the options aren't really there for him in terms of other clubs to go to. You know, the Spanish clubs are in flux. Bayern don't really have the money. PSG maybe, but, you know, that throws its own problems in terms of just being a messy shadow there and the weakness of the league itself. So I don't think that's quite appealing. So I personally think that will get done. If that gets done, then you've still got the issues around Sadio Mane's contract and Firmino. Now, if we get to next summer and those Liverpool look like they're going to allow those to elapse, which is a strong possibility, I think, particularly with Firmino, that they may just decide that, okay, you get to the end of this contract and then we part ways, so you can go and play more football elsewhere. As we transition,
loves him though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he absolutely does, and I understand why, but I think it's going to be a decision for Firmino maybe to make about whether he wants to sign a contract with Liverpool, because I think Liverpool have got one eye on the future and how they transition to a different looking forward line. So that's why this is key to the summer coming, is in terms of if Sadio Mane and Firmino get to next summer and they're 1 year out from the end of their contracts, then I think Liverpool are then going to have one eye on bringing in someone like, you know, I've seen Adeyemi linked from Salzburg, who sort of makes sense in terms of profile. I don't know if you'd probably prefer to stay or to go to Germany instead, you know, rather than making a move to Premier League. But someone of that profile who they can sort of slowly blood into the team makes a lot of sense to me. You know, maybe even a slightly further along in terms of development forward, someone who was like Salah's age when he came in, say with Mane, about 23, 24, ready to sort of explode to world-class level. You know, if Mane and Firmino are 1 year from the contract, that those sorts of deals become a lot easier to do, because the pathway then into the first team and regular football is much clearer. So I think a lot has got to be decided on that front.
I just ask you, on the Salah contract?
Yeah.
What are you hearing is the type of money that perhaps Salah wants?
Well, it's around 300,000. I mean, maybe we're tipping beyond that. Maybe it's sort of, I think a lot of discussion is how that will be made up, in terms of obviously there's so much of a bonus and incentivized level to these contracts at Liverpool that I think that will be, you know, Liverpool will be very keen to sort of lean on that structure again, because they don't want to tie themselves to a mega contract like a Mesut Ozil or a Alexis Sanchez, where you end up getting towards the end of it in this play. I mean, I don't believe that salary's of that type, because I think, you know, physically, look at the condition of him. He seems, you know, like a Ronaldo who will keep going till he's 36. He will still be hitting those heights. He looks after himself incredibly well, but I think Liverpool will be just wary of just falling into that trap. So I think that's what a lot of the discussion still to have is, but I think there's a general agreement that Liverpool are desperate to keep him. I think Salah doesn't really want to go anywhere if he can avoid it. So I think, yeah, I'm fairly confident that will get done.
Lovely stuff. Well, listen, mate, thank you very much. Is anything you're working on at the moment that people should be looking out for?
If anyone wants to support anything, just maybe buy Sunday Mirror every week. Yeah. If you wanna, I don't always do Liverpool in there, but there's, yeah, you can read my stuff in there if you like.
Lovely stuff. Well, listen, thanks very much, mate. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe button, the like button, and share our content on your social media platform. Dave, thanks a lot, mate, and hopefully I'll see you soon at the match.
No problem.